We're going to begin a study this morning together about one of those things that the eye can't see, but that is an essential ingredient to having a life well lived, at least in my opinion. Many, many years ago, in the 100s, around the year 163, 165, the early Christians were suffering through persecution. And one of the leaders in the church in a certain place, an elderly man by the name of Polycarp, had gone about his business and his work as a shepherd of the flock of God in that place, made no secret of what his faith was or what his role was in the church there. The local government official sent out the soldiers to hunt down Polycarp. The word had come down from higher up in the Roman hierarchy that Christians' leaders ought to be arrested. And so Polycarp was found in his home. He wasn't hiding. When they came to arrest him, he asked for permission to pray first. So they waited outside for more than an hour while he prayed. And then he was taken before the government officials, questioned, tortured, begged, threatened, whatever they thought it would take to try to get him to in any way recant some part of what he believed so that he would be more in conformity with what the government was demanding at that time of all who lived in the Roman Empire. And he wouldn't budge. Finally, he was taken into the arena. Almost every town of any size, including the one in which he lived, had a place where sporting events and other things were conducted. So he was taken into the arena. And while a huge crowd had gathered and filled up the stadium where he was, he stood there, a man in his 90s, frail, weak in some aspects. And he stands there before the dais of the Roman official who announces to the crowd why they're there and what this is all about. And here is a leader of the Christians, and he refuses to recant his faith that Jesus Christ is Lord and that there is another God that we should serve other than the one that sits on the throne in Rome. He says, to show the mercy and grace of the Roman government, we're going to give him one more opportunity to give up this superstition that he holds to. Well, we can't tell you all the rest of the story. One of the first things a Roman official did was call out to Polycarp standing down there and say, "Will you just say, away with the atheist?" Christians, believe it or not, were thought by the Romans to be atheists because they didn't believe in the gods that the Romans believed in. And so Polycarp said, "Away with the atheist." Well, of course, he thought practically everyone in that stadium except him was an atheist. And they were thinking just the opposite. Atheism is something that's been around probably as long as man has been. The conviction that there is no God, or a somewhat less hardline approach called agnosticism, which says we don't believe there's enough evidence one way or the other to be persuaded that there is a God or to be fully persuaded that there isn't. Recent polls in our country have indicated that while atheism itself is not growing, doubt about the existence of God is. Polls, I guess, by people who they've got to make a living some way, and so they ask other people questions and charge for that. Whether it's the Gallup poll or some of the major news media or others, even some religious groups continue to conduct such polls. And it seems like that over the last probably 20, 25 years, the number of people who profess that they believe in the existence of some supreme being has stayed pretty level in the United States. But when they ask more questions, they start discovering that what they believe in is changing. Now, more and more people, instead of saying they believe in God as defined by the Christian faith or the Jewish faith, instead will say, we believe in a supreme being, a higher power, a cosmic force, Allah. The Star Wars trilogy, or actually there were six of them before it was all over with, in which there was this force be with you kind of thing. A universal spirit or perhaps even so ambiguous as to say there's some intelligence behind everything. There's also going on in our country right now, as you probably are aware, a new wave of what's called militant atheism. Now, believe it or not, that's probably a term this group itself is choosing. So men and women who are so strongly convicted about their belief that there is no God, that they have devoted themselves in part or in whole to attacking the very idea that others hold to, that there is in fact a God. They write books, they appear on talk shows, they have radio programs, appear on specials on television. Make sure they get interviewed or heard or appear at any kind of court hearings or lawsuits or other kind of things that might be in any way at all challenging the concept of God, and make sure that they get heard. And they seem to be well organized, well funded. They seek publicity because they know that that's how they're going to get their message out. They seek to influence public opinion. They challenge in public life in America right now any acknowledgement of God. So they will oppose prayer, references, education, or media that in any way might be connected to God. My purpose and task in mentioning all this to you is not to attack them. I don't question their convictions. I don't even question their right to exercise those convictions in the way that they are. What I challenge is those of us who do believe in God to do the same thing. We have the same right they do. They are exercising their right, fortunately, in our country, of free speech, of the right to believe what is your convictions, or to believe nothing at all. No doubt we feel like they've overstepped their bounds in some part by trying to force others to publicly practice what they practice, which is nothing to do with religion. But we need to also be speaking up. Now, that speaking up may not be in the media. That speaking up may not be by writing books. It may not be by appearing on talk shows and other things. But when only one side of an argument is ever heard, how likely is truth to be found? We cannot afford to be cowed by their militants. We can't afford to be quietened, to silence, to be afraid. Because if that happens for very long, and it is already happening, soon many people in our country who only hear one voice speaking on this subject will think that the other side has nothing to say and has no answer, and will lean more and more towards that voice they're hearing, when in fact they need to hear both sides. And I think we have nothing to fear by letting our arguments be heard. These arguments have by and large existed for thousands of years, and the world hasn't been taken over by atheists yet. The greater part of our world hasn't become agnostic when both sides have been heard. So we need to, in our daily conversation with our family, our friends, others we come in contact with, not be afraid to say, in whatever way is appropriate, yes, I believe in God. And even share, if it's appropriate, why. This modern atheism is using some of the same tactics that have been developed a long time ago. We need to realize that this is not a new thing. The writer of the Psalms in the Old Testament, we're talking about 2,900 years ago, writes, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God." And that appears in about three different of the Psalms. Clearly, there were some people in their day who had concluded, for whatever reason, that there is no supernatural being to whom we all answer. So atheism isn't a new thing. You might be surprised at the names that could be mentioned in more recent history of men and sometimes women as well who were atheists or agnostic to the very edge of atheism. The French Revolution was not entirely, but significantly fueled by the writings and teachings and thoughts of a certain man by the name of Voltaire, who was a militant agnostic. And part of his goal in helping fuel and support the French Revolution, in which thousands and thousands of people were killed, sometimes their only crime being they were committed members of the Catholic Church, was to replace a religious society with a non-religious one. Charles Darwin, often credited with being the father of modern evolution, although you might be surprised if you actually went back and read his books on evolution and how different that is from what modern evolutionists believe, they give him credit even though they don't believe what he believed. Started out a believer and then became an agnostic and eventually became an atheist. Karl Marx, father of communism. Sigmund Freud, the father of some forms of modern psychology. Friedrich Nietzsche, considered by many a huge influence on modern philosophers. Mao Zedong in China. All openly active, professing agnostics or atheists. So these people are well placed and aren't afraid to voice their opinion on this subject, and sometimes go a good deal further than just voice their opinion. They often appeal, in this day and time at least, to science. Says science proves, or if they're a little more careful, they'll say there is no place in science where we see any need for something or someone called God. But besides science, they'll also appeal to other things which they feel like are weaknesses in the believer's position concerning God. They will say, there's so much evil that's been done in the world in the name of religion. How could you possibly justify that? Of course, that doesn't prove one way or the other there's a God. But that's an argument. They'll say, if he exists, or it exists, and is all powerful, and is all good, why does he allow, or why doesn't he stop, or why didn't he create things differently so that there wouldn't be pain, suffering, atrocities, war, famine, natural disasters? Or even, if there really is a God, why can't we see him? Where is he? You say he's invisible. We say he's not there. We need to understand the issues that are involved here, and along with some of the tactics and goals that are being trying to be accomplished by those of the no-God or anti-God movements, and be clear in our own minds, first of all, about what we do believe and why we believe it, and be willing to participate in our culture in this discussion so that people hear both sides. Remember when the astronauts first were going up and circling the Earth? I should have looked up the reference before I got up here of the Russian cosmonaut who made the comment afterwards that he went into outer space, he went into heaven, and he didn't see God. Then there were the American astronauts who were circling the Earth, who, when given the opportunity, read to an American public who was listening as they looked at outer space, the first few verses of Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Clearly, there are people on both sides of this issue who are willing to speak. Are we one of them? Just want to say a couple of things quickly now. It's going to be a longer discussion, obviously, than this morning. But there are two facts that we need to start with. Even before we start talking about what convinces us that God exists and what he is like. Fact number one for me is, yes, I do believe in an invisible God. The fact that I do not see him now with my human eyes and have not seen him has not dissuaded me from believing that he exists. In the Old Testament, in our Bibles, the Jewish people, and even before we could have called them Jewish people, when we're talking about Adam and Abel and Abraham and Jacob and all of those, even before the Jewish nation as a separate group of people could be identified that way, and then especially after They, as a Jewish people, came out of Egypt and were formed as a separate ethnic group and eventually settled into the land that is now called Israel and so forth. They were consistently and always forbidden to ever make any image or likeness that might represent God. From our perspective, as we read the Bible, we say that's what God told them to not do. God never wanted anything to be made that would in any way represent His likeness. He chooses to be an invisible God. And He chose and He chooses to be known as only one. That was also consistent throughout the Old Testament. Only one and invisible. In Isaiah, there's this nice little phrase. Often when we read Isaiah, we're looking for other things. But in Isaiah chapter 45, Isaiah, in speaking for God and to God at the same time, says, "Truly you are a God who hides Himself, O God and Savior of Israel." When we get to the New Testament, of course, almost everyone we're reading the writings of in our New Testament, Matthew, Mark, John, not Luke, are Jewish. Luke was actually a Greek, but came to believe in the same things the Jewish people did and in Christianity. Paul, James, Jude, Peter, I think that covers all of the authors in the New Testament. All of them Jewish, so they all had this deep conviction that had been put into them from their earliest childhood that God cannot be represented by any image. And so we hear them repeating that and saying that in what is said in John, in the beginning of that gospel, as he introduces his account of the life of Jesus. He says in his prologue, John chapter 1, verse 18, "No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made Him known." John introduces his account of the life of Christ by saying Jesus came to show us what God was like. Later, Jesus will be with His disciples, and in fact, He's trying to get them ready for the fact He's going away. He's going to die, rise from the dead, and then ascend back into heaven. He tells His disciples, "I'm going to prepare a place for you, but if I go, I'll come again so I can take you to be where I am." And so one of His disciples says there in John chapter 14, "We don't know where you're going." And He tells them He's going to His Father. By that He meant God. And so one of His disciples says, "Show us the Father, and that will be enough." Here they lived generation after generation as Jewish people, and no one had ever seen God. So finally one of them says, "If you're going to see the Father, show us." And Jesus says, "Don't you know that when you've seen Me, you have seen the Father?" What He was saying is, you have seen what God is like by seeing Me. But notice how there's always this fact that God is the invisible. He is not seen by us. Paul, when he was writing to Timothy, just picking out a few passages that emphasize this particular thought. In 1 Timothy chapter 1, Paul has been talking to Timothy about how he himself, Paul, had once been a blasphemer and a persecutor and a violent man, not because he didn't believe in God, but because he believed the Christians were so totally off base in their beliefs. And he had ended up becoming one and then a most powerful advocate for the Christian faith from that point forward. And as he's wrapping up that set of comments to Timothy, he says in verse 17, 1 Timothy 1, "Now to the King eternal, immortal, invisible, the only God, be honor and glory forever and ever. Amen." The fact that God was invisible did not keep these men from believing that He existed, nor does it keep us. At the end of the same letter he writes to Timothy, he will say to him in chapter 6, he's talking about what God will bring to pass in the future. And so he'll say in 1 Timothy 6, starting in 15, which God will bring about in His own time, God, the blessed and only ruler, the King of kings and the Lord of lords, who alone is immortal and who lives in unapproachable light, whom no one has seen or can see. To Him be honor and might forever. Amen. Or again, when he was standing in Athens, at the very center of education and intellect in the ancient world, and here this poor Jewish preacher was standing before the world's greatest philosophers and teachers of that generation. When they gave him the opportunity to speak, he said that as he was walking through their city, he observed the fact that they believed in many gods. He saw their temples and their altars everywhere. But he had come upon one particular altar that had inscribed upon the side of it. And in more recent times, archaeologists have actually found such an altar in Athens that says, to an unknown God. And he says, the God that's not known to you, I want to tell you about today. And that's the God we're talking about. So the fact one is, we do believe in an invisible God. But fact number two, invisible does not equal unreal. Can you grasp that? Just because something is invisible doesn't mean that it isn't real. One of the most common arguments of many of those, not maybe at the very top of the sort of the atheistic food chain, those who are considered the most educated and the most outspoken and most scientific, whatever that is, maybe they don't say it so much. But many down below them do. They argue, well, if there's a God, why can't we see Him? It's as if that proves He isn't there. It proves no such thing. These same scientists believe in a great number of things they've never seen in the areas of science. They've never seen gravity. They can't even see the wind, as Jesus Himself said in John chapter 3. They can't see the quark, the proton, the electron, the neutron, the atom. They see none of those things. But their whole careers and science is built upon the belief in them. Just because something is invisible, for whatever reason it may be, is not equivalent to saying it isn't real. For there are ways to know things exist, even if they are invisible. They tell us that the greater part of the light spectrum, we're here in a somewhat well-lit room, at least well enough to see things and so forth. And yet they tell us a greater part of the light spectrum is invisible to our human eyes. That doesn't make it unreal. The same is also true about the audible spectrum, sound. I was recently reading, and I think I shared in an earlier lesson, about some of the great whales in the sea and how they communicate, and they call it whale song. They communicate with sound at such a low audible frequency, it's impossible for the human ear to hear. And yet they can make that sound and it can travel as much as 1,000 miles through the waters of the oceans for other whales to hear. Invisible is not equal to unreal. Now true, some things that are invisible because they're not in fact real. But that they're not automatically equivalent to other. So many things, qualities and such are in fact invisible but real. And we are believers in such an invisible God. And the passage that was read to us at the beginning of our service this morning, Paul, in writing to the Christians who lived in the great city of Rome, the center of the Roman Empire, said to them as he began his letter, Romans 1:16, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes. So he says the gospel is God's power. But there's an issue here. This God's invisible. So can some use that as an excuse not to believe just simply because they haven't seen Him? It's the power of God for the salvation of everyone who believes, first for the Jew, then for the Gentile. For in the gospel, a righteousness from God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last, just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith. And the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness and wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, both His eternal power and His divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. For although they knew God, they neither glorified Him as God nor gave thanks to Him. But their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened. Paul said, maybe people think because we believe in God, we've got a problem. We've got this invisible God we believe in, and so other people say, well, we can't see Him, so we don't believe in Him. He said, they're without excuse. Simply because He's invisible doesn't mean they can't know about Him. They have chosen to ignore the evidence. We're going to spend some time talking about that over the next few weeks. Many more passages that could be presented to you. But we need to realize that our battle and our culture, among other things right now, is for the minds, hearts, and values that people cherish. Years ago, a book was written on a wholly different subject, but I like the title. You often hear me talk about, I even buy books sometimes because of the name of the book. I never even read the book. I love the title. There's a book written a number of years ago by a man by the name of Homer Haley, who happened to be one of my college instructors. And it was called Attitudes and Consequences, which he set forth in that book that the way people think about certain things ends up determining what they do. We might rather say assumptions and conclusions would probably fit that as well, but it just doesn't ring quite as well. If in our culture people do not believe there is a God, and that they therefore will never be held accountable to Him, that will determine how they act. If on the other hand people believe there is a supreme being, even though invisible, and that He has revealed what pleases Him, and He will hold accountable those people who do not do His will, that also will have an effect on how they live. Not just as individuals, but collectively then it will determine how we live as a culture. So we need to be doing our part to help fight this battle and shape the thinking of people around us. It's no longer a given that people are going to believe in God the same way we do. For many people, it's no longer evident. Even if they claim they believe in a God, they may say, well, I don't actually have any evidence of it. I just believe it. We need to be, as Peter encouraged the Christians of his time when they were facing a persecution, he said, be ready always to give an answer to everyone that asks you a reason for the hope that is within you. 1 Peter 3:15. There was a very prominent atheist who died in 1970. His name was Bertrand Russell. He had a profound influence in the world of philosophy and in the world of science. We may not actually realize that because his name isn't necessarily associated with any major theory of science and so forth, but he actually contributed more in the idea of what determines what is science and what is evidence and how does logic lead us to conclusions. He was a very prominent atheist. He wrote a book, still widely available, called Why I Am Not a Christian, in which he details the reasons why he did not believe either in the God of Christians or the God of anybody else, or in the values, therefore, they held. He knew that there is such a thing as attitudes and consequences, and that people often do what they do because of the belief system they have. It's reported that when he was near death, one of those accompanying him as he approached that moment in his life, asked him about his readiness to die. He assured them he was ready. But then they asked him, what if it turns out that when you pass from this life, you discover that after all, there is a God? And supposedly he replied, in that case, I would ask him, why didn't he give us more evidence? As if it were somehow God's fault. Certainly he died in his faith, such as it was. He did give us more evidence, but he is invisible. We sing a hymn, Holy, 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 number 47 in our songbooks. The third verse of it says, though the eye of sinful man thy glory cannot see, we can still believe in him. a more recent hymn written by a man I had the privilege to meet before he died, named A.W. Dicus, wrote another one we sing often called There Is a God, Our God, He is Alive. Remember, what is that, Kevin, 23? Something like that in our songbook. Mr. Dicus was a scientist, but was a strong believer in God. He would say, there is, beyond the azure blue, a God concealed from human sight. Though men may search, they cannot find. He's just commenting on the fact that many of his contemporaries and his peers couldn't see what he thought he could see by faith. The God who is there, that'll be the name of our series. I shamelessly stole that from somebody else. There's actually a book out there by that name. But that's what we're going to talk about.